Artist and essayist Anshul Vanhani asks us, have you ever stood before a painting and felt like it was looking back at you? Not just something you admire from a distance, but something that senses you too? That moment when time slows, your mind stops explaining, and you simply feel. That is the essence of presencing in art. It's not a new concept. It's what great art has always done. Yet in today's world, where we rush from one image to another, we rarely let art meet us where we are. Presencing is about making that meeting happen, both for the artist creating and for the viewer discovering the work. What is presencing? Otto Scharmerer at MIT coined the term, and it describes presencing as the ability to sense and bring into being what is emerging, rather than being trapped in the patterns of the past. Presencing is when you are fully here, engaged with what is unfolding in front of you without forcing meaning onto it. It's when an artist lets the brush move without overthinking, and when a viewer lets an artwork speak before they try to define it. Now, imagine what happens when art is approached this way, when artists create with presence, and viewers experience with presence. Art stops being a product and becomes an encounter. For the artist, it is letting art emerge. If you've ever created something, painted, sculpted, or even scribbled on a napkin, you know the difference between forcing an idea and letting something unfold. Many artists begin with a concept, but something magical happens when they lose themselves in the process. The work starts guiding them, rather than trying to control it themselves. This is presencing. It's when the artist stops dictating and starts listening to the brush, the material, the silence, and to something deeper within themselves. The result? Art that breathes. It carries something alive in it, something the viewer will sense before they even understand why. Think of artists like Rothko, whose color fields aren't just painted and seen, they are experiences. Or the quiet intensity of a Giacometti sculpture, figures that seem to exist in multiple dimensions at once. These works weren't just made, they were felt into being. For an artist, practicing presencing is about allowing the unknown to shape the work. It's about trusting what wants to emerge rather than forcing what they already know. For the viewer, encountering, not consuming, is the key. The aha moment can be part of the whole experience. That's when something connects. And whether you're an artist or a viewer, here's the thing. Art is not something you control. It's something you meet. Presencing is the art of meeting art. It's what happens when an artist allows creation to unfold and when viewers allow themselves to be moved before their mind steps in to analyze. It's the difference between seeing art and experiencing it, and it can mean becoming part of its story. That from Anshul Vanhani of Subjective.art in 2015. As Vanhani describes presencing, it's an enlivening concept that we might eagerly seek out, but in his streamlined discussion, we don't get below the surface of what it takes to bring a painting to life like that, or the extent of the effort viewers might need to put forth when we engage with such a work. We're about to learn what the creative process is like for serious artists who spend their lives making works that are vital, works with presence, to meet, in a sense, Robert Stark. Robert Stark, distinguished artist and founder of the Art Exchange at the Susquehanna Studio here in Uniondale, died on March 9th in Albuquerque, where he lived part of the year. As we're told, his work has been showcased in solo exhibitions at the Corcoran Gallery of Art and the Phillips Collection in Washington, D.C. His paintings were also part of the U.S. State Department's Art in Embassies program, where they traveled around the world. An exhibit titled A Life in Art, Works by Robert Stark, opened on June 26th at the Waverly Community House Small Works Gallery. Curator of the show is Stark's longtime friend and fellow artist, also dedicated to bringing forth vitality and beauty in his paintings, William Chiquillo of the Sky Lake Gallery in Fleetville in Lackawanna County. What they each created was very different, but the process, the struggles, the risks, the rewards are what led them to a deep mutual respect and admiration, and though Bill doesn't use the exact phrase, perhaps to a kind of brotherly love. Bill paid a visit to the WVIA studios to talk about Robert Stark and his work and what made Stark an artist, a true artist, to the very core. And we learn it was their work that first brought them together.
Like so many artists, when you see somebody's work that you appreciate, you come on search them out because you have something in common. There's a language, a dialogue of painting that you both share. Bob was a colleague. He was a friend. He was a brother. We had something that we shared. Then we had a passion about the arts. We had an understanding about it, both exposed to it, not only through our education, but through practice. And I think that we both were studio painters, and we liked sharing each other's work. He liked what I did, and I liked what he did. So therefore, we had this common goal that we both understood that landscape was, even though something that was around us, they were looking for something that was intangible about it, too, at the same time.
When did you discover his work, or he yours?
This has to go back to the beginning of 1980, and it was Bob that introduced me to Marie Martin in Washington, D.C., where I got my first show in Washington. It was because of Bob. And Bob was that kind of guy. He was gracious. He was sharing. He was a kind man. He was a gentleman. And there was something about him that made you feel like, you know, you could be his friend. He was trustworthy. He was of all of the things you expected from a good human being.
Did you sit down with each other and talk shop, talk art? Did you have those kinds of conversations?
Yes, sometimes, and sometimes it was almost understood. You could see it in our work, what you're trying to pursue. You weren't always going to get it. It wasn't always going to reveal itself to you right away. But the pursuit of that was the camaraderie that we both had. And we both share that, trying to find that information, trying to find that magic in that painting that makes it different. What it is about that landscape that draws you to that point. What makes that piece so much different from thousands of other landscapes that you've seen? So we were both in pursuit of that, and there was an understanding for that. Did we always get it? No. But here's the thing. We both understood there's going to be a lot of failure, lots of failure. And the fact that you're able to embrace that failure allows you to get to a place where you might find what you need.
When you mentioned that he did some shifting in his styles.
Yes, I think the pastel period was a period, is your drawing period. And you have to learn how to draw. If you want to become a painter, you have to learn how to draw. And pastel was a media that he could explore to get to that point. And then he reached the point where the pastels weren't enough. It wasn't fulfilling enough in a sense that it was satisfying your appetite. And we both shared an appetite for work. You have to have that. Because if you don't have that, you can't move to the next period or to take the chance or to take that jump or that leap where you know you're going to fail, but you're going to do it anyway. And he had that courage.
Did you talk about those moments?
Well, and not in a literal way. it was something that was understood, that when you work every day, you understand that there are going to be days when you don't want to be there, and you just work through it. You know, when we both know that you can spend 4 or 5 hours in the studio all day long waiting for something to happen or hoping that something is going to happen. Nothing ever does. And that last 15, 20 minutes right before you're ready to leave the shop totally exhausted is when it occurs. Were you willing to stick it out? He was.
Where do you think that came from? Was that a personality gift that he had, or did it come about because of mentors and teachers that he had? What about him, would you guess?
I think it was all that. I think he had studied with Minor White and some other great painters, and he knew several of them, and he understood what it took to do it, to put that effort and commitment into your work. He was serious about it. And he had that understanding that if you wanted to do this, you're going to have to sacrifice. There are going to be days when you don't want to do it and you're going to do it anyway. And there's going to be days when you need to take some time off and do something else and then come back at it. And he understood all of that. It wasn't something like we had to talk about. I think it was something that we both shared.
And respected in each other.
Yes. And he saw it in my work, and I saw it in his work. And we liked looking at each other's work in the capacity of what was new, what did you find a little different, or that was nice, that was challenging, you know, and you're able to share that with somebody. He was very adventurous with color. Do things with color that I wouldn't do. And he would share, I would do things with the brush stroke or with the energy that he didn't do, but we both respected each other.
You said that he studied painting conservation.
Yes. I don't know totally his background on that, but I think he spent some time in Washington, D.C. And so that I know that from my days at Maryland Institute, where they took us to the Baltimore Museum and you're holding a Degas pastel or a Mary Cassatt woodcut and you're holding something like that, you get to see the surface of it. You get to see how it was made and you can spend time with it. It's not a book. You could really look at it. Are you prepared for that? You're never prepared for it, but there it is. It's like a gift to be able to see something like that. And there's something to be said about having an institution supporting all of that. And the people that you're going to come in contact with, other educators, other lecturers to come in that, they all make you. It's all making part of your personality. And you adapt to it. And then at the same time, you have a hunger for it because they created a hunger for it.
What about the surface then? You told us that in that discipline, he was able, no doubt, to get beyond just surface observations, but to deal with the paint that was there on the canvas.
We both understood that you have to, painting is sort of like penance. You have to pay a price in the sense that sometimes you have to scrape it off and do it again. And reminded of a story about John Singer Sargent. You look at some of his brushstrokes and you think how brilliant they were. But to get to that, sometimes he had to scrape the surface off entirely and then put that brushstroke on. So you have to have an understanding of the freedom that it takes to make that, the execution of that stroke, and to be so positive, so secure in making that statement that you believe that what you see and what you're doing, that mark that you make is what you see or what you feel.
And you used an image that was quite striking, and that was talking about the fact that the application of the paint on the canvas as it is applied by the artist has a dynamism and can have a life if the artist really is trusting, as you just said.
Yes, and it takes a lot of time to get to that point because you're dealing with the physical quality of oils. They don't behave very well. And, you know, you have to work them. They're sticky. They can be in the wrong place or the wrong value or the wrong color, or you applied it wrong. And you have to take all of that into consideration. In order to get where you got to go, you're going to have to make a lot of mistakes and familiarize with all of the pitfalls that it has for you, that are waiting for you. And are you willing to be able to adapt and to be able to pursue it? Because you're going to fail.
You talked about artists in the studio, you in your studio and he in his studio. The Art Exchange was public, right? Did he open it up to classes and things like that?
Oh, yeah. He had everything there from fly tying to birdhouse making. He included a lot of different things every summer. He would invite people to come and do their craft or their art. And Bob had appreciation for a lot of people and for their work. Everything from mobiles to furniture designers. He included a lot of people. He loved being around creative people because I think he found the energy from that. And he just appreciated what they did to the point where he's collected a lot of their work as well. I have to tell you a little story. I have been gifted some of his artist materials after his passing. And I found myself today working with some oil sticks and a couple of his brushes. And it's kind of like remarkable how that feels. I don't want to use the word spiritual, but you know, you'll have to interpret this the way you like. So there was a feeling that, you know, I think he would appreciate what I'm doing. You know, that none of this stuff that he had, his materials, are lost. They're being used. And they're being used by somebody that he liked, hopefully, and he appreciates it, and he knows it'll go on living. So in that regard, I think it's kind of cool. I don't know how to explain it any other way.
What about place Susquehanna Studio Art Exchange here, but also he was drawn to the Southwest. What did being in a place as an artist mean to him, and how was it reflected, could you say?
I think the Southwest had something that we have here on the East Coast didn't have, which was color, the dryness of it, and the fact that he could work almost every single day. You know, living here on the East Coast in the month of April, even parts of May, your studio is not a friendly place. I mean, it can be damp, it can be cold, it's warm humidity one day, and the next day the light is terrible because we have a lot of gray days. But that wasn't the case in the Southwest, and I think he loved that. He loved the fact that he could work, and also was probably good for his health, because towards the end of his life, he was sick, and he was sick in a way that he wasn't able to do what he wanted to do as much, but he didn't stop, sort of like what happened to Matisse towards the end of his life, when Matisse was starting to do cutouts. Bob was making these little figures with wood and painting them, and he kept on going. He did not stop. He had the same courage, same energy that brought him into this, and he was going to leave with it. I can speak a little bit towards the scale of his work. I mean, Bob loved painting large, as big as he can make them. And I could tell you that the large paintings that I've done, it's a very physical part of your approach, that you have to be in good enough shape to be able to go from the top to the bottom and carry it from left to right, or lay it on the floor and bring it back up on the easel, and to be able to have the strength to be able to move it around and then be able to put paint on it at the same time, and sometimes scrape it off and do it again. And so it takes a lot out of you. And it's not like pushing a little brush around. You're not. You're pushing a big brush around with as much paint on it as you can. And hopefully it's going in the right direction. And you know that the next passage may be the right one, and you could lose it at any time because the scale of it is so large that it can consume a mark quickly.
And what is the importance for an artist who likes working on a large scale? Is it the sense that the presence of the painting is something that is so much larger than we are that it might draw us in? Is that part of that, would you say?
I think when you look at small paintings, you're looking at them. But when you're seeing a big painting, it's looking back at you. So you're confronted by the scale of it. And the scale, then your eye has to move around in search of an entrance. Because of that, the weight of that painting is an experience, unlike a small work that's just more intimate and more delicate, and you can appreciate the nuances of it. There are no nuances in a large scale painting. It's confronting you with all the energy it has, and it's up to you to be able to find where you want to enter it. Sometimes there'll be more than one place. There could be two or three entrances, but your eye will move around. It's a great experience to be able to stand in front of a big painting and try to feel what that artist did to get to that point where he's trying to convey that to you. He's evoking something. There's a meaning there. There's an expression there. There's an idea there. And none of it reveals itself to you that quickly. We're all after information. And what we do with that information could lend itself more to realism or can lend itself more to abstraction. But I'm reminded by what David Hockney just said, who just passed away, that, you know, we're all painting from memory, whether it's 5 seconds, 5 minutes, 5 months, or 5 years. And think about that for a second. We all think we're drawing from life. Well, how quickly can you get from the still life or the object, or that tree, whatever you're looking at, and get it down on paper? It could take 5 seconds or 5 minutes. So in that sense, he is right, isn't he?
If you're going back 5 years, it's all the experiences you've had between that first encounter with the tree or the still life and your coming to express it.
Right, and that's why I appreciated Bob. You know, Bob is my senior. And I think there was a respect for that. He's been there before a lot of us. And in that regard, he had an aptitude for understanding things that you felt he had a sense of knowing. And he was willing to explore it, too. And so, therefore, you had a kind of respect for that as well. But Bob is a very gracious guy. He was able to extend that to everybody he met.
You mentioned in passing Minor White, and Minor White we know as a photographer. He
studied with Minor White. So Bob was a very skilled photographer. So he understood composition, form, light, values. So he got all of that to bring into his painting.
Tell us a little bit more about his passion for color. You expressed the fact that he went some places with color that you might not have gone. Why do you suspect that he had this fascination with color and how spoke? Because you all, as artists, work with color, whether you have a wide palette or not.
I think he understood and he liked the Impressionist as well as I did. And I think there's a great deal to be learned from the Impressionist and their color theory. You know, when you first look at an Impressionist painting, my God, you say, oh, look at all that color. Not really. It's really quite limited. The palette, and he understood this, is that you limit your palette, but you're using several colors to make one color. And then when you're ready to expose the color by itself, all those other colors are in that one color. So you're setting up the palette for that one color that you want to express. He understood that. And sometimes he would do it more than once. And I'd look what he did with that blue. I just, you know, would say, yeah, that took some guts. A painting is it's a mysterious thing in a sense that you're not always going to get what you want. It doesn't doesn't reveal itself to you right away. So you have to be paying attention, because it will talk, the painting will talk to you, and you have to listen to the painting and apply that color where it needs it, not where you want it, but where it needs it.
We're looking at a large photo of him at this large canvas. Any of those tools of the trade that you have inherited from him?
Yeah, quite a few of them. Several of his brushes, which I'll leave in the can and not use.
He would come to the radio studio to talk about his work when he had a show, and he would often bring with him CDs of music he listened to while he was painting, and among them, I have one over my shoulder, Arvo Pärt, Fratres. And he said how important it was for him to have that in his environment as he was creating. That's meditative music. That's minimal music. It doesn't change very much. It doesn't have highs and lows. It might induce in some people a meditative state or a Zen state so that they can drop in more deeply to their whatever, subconscious, or get beyond the ego and in that way tap into the more creative aspects. Was there something spiritual about Bob and his work, maybe not with a capital S?
I could say this. After Bob passed away, I went upstairs in his studio, and I could still feel a certain presence there. Yes, there was something about him that made you feel like you're entering his sanctum there, that there was a lot of ghosts there. There were things that he thought about that only he would know. And there's a lot of things to go through an artist's mind when he's in his studio. Some that you have to confront, some things you work through, some things that you think about, they come in your mind, they slip out. Sometimes you don't listen to them all because you have music on. So therefore, yeah, it's a special place, a studio.
When you went into that studio, you had to go back and choose some pieces for the show. You had to choose smaller works because we're at the Waverly Community House, small works gallery. Were they on the wall? How did he keep these?
These were all, most of them were in boxes or leaning against the wall. So I start picking pieces that I felt had a cheerfulness to them, that there was an energy of life about them that I felt that he wanted to share. So once I nailed one or two down, I said, I like these two. I start looking for a color palette that would coordinate with that. So if there was one that might have the same energy, it may not have the exact color. The color field might be limited even so, but it still had the same feeling, or it felt like it was still part of that body of work. So it took me several hours to do it, and I'd lay them out, and sometimes I would edit them, take one that was better than another. Even though I liked that painting, this one for the show would represent what he was trying to say. I remember the first time he had a show with Elizabeth, his wife, in Albuquerque, and he wasn't able to attend the show. He said, Bill, photograph the show for me or send me a video of it. He says, I'd like to see it, because he sent all this work up. So I did, and he was very, very particular about what paintings went with each other and how they represented one facet of an involvement to the next, or how the color would change to represent something he was feeling. So hopefully I did a pretty good job picking that out. Painting is like a dialogue with yourself, like having a conversation with yourself. And you're listening to yourself in your thoughts, and then sometimes those thoughts are projected onto the canvas, and it comes to a point where the colors that you placed may not fit. Well, then you're going to have to reinvent that conversation over again. So there's a give and an exchange that takes place, and that dialogue with you and the canvas is always a back and forth kind of thing, that eventually something's going to give if you're paying attention.
And you said and suggested, and we can understand it, that he kept working till the end and that it took courage. It sounds like what you've just described about having that conversation with yourself through working with paint and a canvas takes courage. You're going to places that most people maybe don't want to go.
Well, Bob did that. He went to places where a lot of artists didn't go just for the pure scale of it. But he was an adventurous guy. He was willing to take a chance and a risk. And I think you have to do that. And, you know, it could be safe. If you're talented enough and good enough, you can do the same thing over and over again and be pleased with it. But if you're willing to be able to take a risk and a chance and move away from something that's safe, make yourself feel uncomfortable, you're going to discover something about yourself that you didn't know about. And that's where the art is.
As someone who talks with creative people from the area, I love it when people who are here doing their work help those of us who don't do the same kind of work learn something about where we are. If we were fortunate enough to be in and around Bob Stark's paintings inspired by, say, these landscapes in our area, is there something that we might recognize and not know we knew or be surprised about or find beautiful that we might not have if we hadn't experienced his work and his sensibilities addressed to the place where we are?
Well, I think if the one thing I could say about Bob's work, he's using color is his universe. And I think that's his connection to all of us. That when I looked at his work and curated the body of work that I've seen, I've seen it through its darkest periods and its gray periods and its color periods. It was like watching four seasons on the East Coast. And that gray days, as gray they are, and winter can be cruel, can also be beautiful. Because winter has its own color, and he found it. It's easy to find color in the summer, or in the spring, even that matter. And fall, forget it. Who can't find color in the fall? Then you're living in the wrong place. Anyway, so I think Bob understood color was the language, and that would be the connection he had with us here in this part of the world, in northeastern PA. If you look at his body of work, you'll see that range of color from grays right up to the most colorful painting he's done. So he understood that language.
Bill, you've been entrusted with a special responsibility of curating a show of the work of your dear friend. You described him as like a brother. What are some of your thoughts right now as you talk about Bob?
Well, you know, I'm lucky to have been involved with somebody that was passionate about the arts as he was. And there was a fraternity, if you will. I mean, I think the Beelen Arts Scholarship is kind of doing that. We're creating a fraternity of artists that are serious about their work, that understand the legacy of the work is going to outlive you. And I think that's what Bob did, and he understood that. That the work that he was leaving behind is going to be remembered. It's going to be still cherished. It'll still be seen. Somebody will write about it. Somebody will talk about it. And if you can say that, then you can say a lot, because if that's all we can leave behind for the next 100 years, isn't that something?
William Chiquillo of the Sky Lake Gallery in Fleetville, speaking about his longtime friend and fellow artist, Robert Stark. Bill was the curator of the recent show titled A Life in Art, Works by Robert Stark at the Waverly Community House Small Works Gallery. Bob and Bill both received the distinguished F. Lamont Beelen Arts Scholarship managed by the Waverly Community House, and Bill just referenced that award. The exhibit is closing as we speak, but you can encounter Robert Stark's work right now. There is an exhibition at the Chamber Gallery in Carbondale, and that will run now through August. and the Chamber Gallery in Carbondale, PA is located at 27 North Main Street. Hours are Monday through Friday, 9 a.m. to 5 p.m. And the Susquehanna Studio, which he founded, will host a celebration of Robert Stark's life on August 29th that coincides with an exhibition of Stark's work. And the show will run through September. And the Susquehanna Studio Art Exchange is located at 16 Lewis Lake Road in Uniondale.